This is the Careering into Motherhood podcast, and I'm Jane Johnson. This month, we're focusing on the subject of female confidence and all the other areas that that seeps into, one of those being overwhelm. When you feel overwhelmed, it's incredibly hard to feel confident in any of the decisions you make or situations you find yourself in. And my guest today is Caroline Doran, a career coach who specializes in helping clients with overwhelm. It seems that this is a subject that has got increasing amounts of airtime over the last couple of years. In our always-on world, where I think especially as mothers, many of us are almost pre-programmed to never say no to things and just keep on going to the point of total overwhelm. You feel like you're letting people down if you say no or if you're not somehow keeping up the side, and I'm really looking forward to this conversation. We first connected quite some time ago, and I know you're obviously a hugely experienced coach. You work with a number of different sectors, including the third sector, I believe, which is an area really interested to explore today. But I guess we could get going for our listeners talking a little bit about what drew you to coaching and what was it you were doing before you became a coach?
Yeah, absolutely. And thank you for having me. It's so fab to be here with you today. So I first worked with a coach when I got my first role as a manager. So I was promoted into a managerial role, and the organisation I was working with at the time offered me the opportunity to work with a coach. And I look back now and I think how lucky I was to get that right at the beginning of my management kind of experience and journey. And it had a huge impact on me. It was so, so helpful to have that space as I was learning and figuring things out. And I worked with a coach pretty much all through my career.
What was it you would say that was so powerful for you? I mean, different from just having water cooler chats and that sort of thing. What did the coach help you with?
It was, I think, in that first experience, it was having the space away with somebody who was separate from the organisation, so I could speak completely openly with her, and just having that opportunity to talk through some of the real knotty challenges I was working with at the time that were all new. And that experience of just through having that conversation, not really knowing what skill she was bringing at the time, but looking back now and seeing those powerful questions that she was bringing that allowed me to get to that answer myself. It was so empowering. I just felt like, oh, I can do it. So it really boosted my confidence as a manager. Just felt like a huge support when I was kind of going through some things that felt very tricky at that time.
I'm just going to chip in there because it is really interesting. I know certainly a lot of the members of our community where they have perhaps either gone back to work and feel that this is no longer right for them, or they've taken time out and want to go back into work but don't quite know where to start. I do get the sense that sometimes there's if I engage a coach, because I'm paying money, that coach is almost going to give me the answers. But as you just said, it's quite the opposite really, isn't it? And how do you do it? what sort of processes and things do you use to tease those answers out?
I suppose it's at the heart of coaching, is it that kind of belief that the person you're working with has all of those answers within them, and it's through this conversation, through this relationship, that they can get to those answers. And that kind of belief, that belief in the potential of the person holding that belief in the conversation with them, is incredibly powerful in itself. And I guess there's also, as a coach, you're trained to listen in a very different way than we normally listen in our conversations. So it's listening to all of it, looking, listening, hearing what's not being said, delving there, challenging your coachee sometimes, calling them on their stories that they're telling themselves. You know, so those things that we just don't do in our normal everyday conversations. You know, so it kind of allows you to uproot some stuff that, you know, that can then have a major impact on how you're thinking about something, what the options might be. You know, so there are many, many tools, but I think, you know, that at the heart of it, that's what it's about, really, I think.
And sorry, I interrupted you. So you were talking about your journey. I always go off down these rabbit holes. Yes, you were talking about how you'd had your first career coach very early on, which, as I say, is something I'm really passionate about myself. I think we tend to use coaching to fix something when we don't know where else to take it. But actually, I think we can have a lot of impact as well, or coaches can have a lot of impact by getting involved before something feels broken. And that was clearly the way for you. So from there, you went where? Did you go straight into coaching?
No. So I suppose that having a coach definitely influenced how I led and managed, bringing in that kind of coaching approach with my own staff, encouraging them to come up with the solutions. Because when we come up with our own solutions, we own them so much more powerfully. That was my experience with my own coaching. So I suppose it influenced how I led and managed. Anytime I was promoted into a new role or took on a new, so I worked in, when I was an employee, I worked in change management. So I worked in some big chunky change programs. And so any new program I was working on, that was one of my things I would ask for, is that, you know, I'll need some space away from this to figure stuff out, work out what's going on, you know. So it became something that was kind of part of my package.
And it
made a huge difference having that. And so it was always there for me as something that was fundamental to my ability to do my job well and to lead well, to influence well, you know, make change happen with that. And I always knew that it would be something that would become part of my work at some stage. And when I set up my own business a few years ago, it was my opportunity to get the qualification that went around. So it was something that the skills I think I've been using for a long time. And it's great because I own my own learning and development budget, so I could I could invest in myself where I wanted to. And it was the best investment I've ever made in myself, doing that coaching qualification. I qualified with an organization called One of Many. They're a women's leadership organization, and so really my coaching is primarily focused around working with women. And yeah, and it changed me, you know, so obviously that was development for me as well as a qualification. And it means that now I get to do work that I absolutely love.
So I'm interested, when you took on a project or went to a new employer and you sort of said, okay, I am going to need, whether it's one day a week or one day a month, whatever it would have been, sort of for myself, for my personal development, that's quite unusual and quite brave, very clever, don't get me wrong. But I'm interested, how did you just present it almost as a fait accompli, or did you get any pushback from employers? How did that go?
Yeah, interestingly, I didn't have to fight hard for it. I think I just, probably because I was so clear about why it was important to me and to the project. So it wasn't just about me, not that it shouldn't be just about you, but it's, you know, for us to get the best outcome here, I'm not going to be able to get. So often I was working into incredibly busy leaders who didn't have the space and the time to work through some of these, like, I'm not going to be able to get that from you. I'm not going to expect it from you, but I need to get it from somewhere. And what I've experienced, the best way I can get that is by working with a coach. And let's set
that up. Really interesting. Really interesting. And I know that you have, over the years, developed this real specialism and passion for helping clients when it comes to overwhelm. And I want to talk about that especially now, because obviously with whether it's overwhelm from work and taking on too much and domestic things and so on, but I think also very relevant at the moment is watching what's happening in the news, obviously in Ukraine, and feeling powerless to help and actually feeling overwhelmed. Yeah, I mean, I sort of wanted to delve a bit into how you help clients with that, because I imagine as well, when somebody feels overwhelmed, they potentially come to you and that manifests itself in all different kinds of ways. I mean, let's hope they don't end up going to, it's either you or the doctors type thing, because it does have a massive impact on health as well, doesn't it? Mm. So what are the sort of signs that you see in people, or what are the trigger signals?
Yeah, there's a lot. So I suppose when I think about overwhelm, this is one where the dictionary definition helps us to really get a sense of what it is, right? Which is bury or drown beneath a huge mass of something. So that's the dictionary definition of overwhelm. And I think, you know, when you think of it in that way, it does describe it. Like, that's what we're talking about. And that huge mass is, you know, what is that for each person who's feeling overwhelmed? And so sometimes it is, like you say, it is the weight of the world, what's going on around us and feeling powerless and helpless and the overwhelming emotional response to that and not knowing what to do with it. Sometimes it's the stuff, the mental load, all of the things, the demands on our time. So the source of it is important to know, but how it manifests, and again, it's different for each of us, but there are definitely, you know, sort of common things I see with the women I work with and that I experience myself, like we all go there sometimes. Things like finding it very difficult to make decisions, like even small decisions, feeling impossibly hard, procrastinating, feeling highly emotional, so feeling tearful quite a lot, or very angry, snapping and irritable to people around us. We can feel it in our body, so like really tense muscle tension, headaches, stomach issues. You know, it can manifest in really mind, body, emotions. You know, it can manifest all of those ways, because really what it is it's our body in stress response. Our body in stress response over an extended period of time, right? So stress response is important for us as humans, you know, in that fight, flight or freeze response. It has an important job to do, but that when we're just there in an adrenalized state for a long period of time, we start to get unwell or to be, you know, so stressed that we can't function effectively. And this is the big thing about overwhelm. I think makes me just so passionate about it. It's very common. It's very, very common. But often we will tell ourselves a story that it's, I'm not good enough. I'm overwhelmed, yes, because I can't do it this well enough. I can't cope. But it does have the impact of it on our brains is, you know, we're unable to make decisions, problem solve, be creative in the same way. So it really does impact how we show up and operate. So it's that can then become a cycle of, you know, then impacting how we feel about ourselves, and round we go.
Yeah. And one of the things, I mean, I will be really honest, I regularly suffer with overwhelm regularly. And one of the things that keeps me on this sort of crazy cycle, I think, is I think, well, if I take myself away from this stuff, whether it's like I feel too much, you know, at home or childcare or work, invariably, then it won't get done. And the fact that there is so much to be done is what's overwhelming. So if I take myself away, that's only going to increase. So how do you help clients, or what are your... what's your advice? What are your thoughts for people feeling in that situation?
And it can feel really counterintuitive to say this, because the best thing you can do when it feels like that, like I can't possibly stop and it's all going to fall down if I stop, is to stop. Because that is...
it's easy for you to say.
I know, it's so easy to say. But I don't know if you've... so my, and I'll talk about my experience, but I know that so when I'm in that mode... and if I do manage to tell myself, you're not helping yourself here, by just feeling more and more stressed out and that there's so much to do, and go out for a walk for 20 minutes and bring myself back to a bit of space in my brain, move my body, and I come back, and those things are just easier to do. I get them done quicker. So there is something about, it doesn't feel logical to tell ourselves that I need to stop now, but all of the evidence suggests that by taking regular breaks, getting outside, moving your body, it just allows you to come down from that highly adrenalized state, which is, you know, kind of actually not helping your brain function effectively.
Yes, it's true. And actually, as you were talking, I'm thinking, so one of the things, you're the second person today to recommend going out and getting into nature. And actually, if you break it down, I was thinking, you know, a couple of hours, but even if it's just half an hour, what I would have, or what anyone would have achieved by sitting at a desk or doing the washing, whatever, in half an hour, is really neither here nor there, is it? So if you come back, it's effectively, you know, wiping the slate clean, refreshing, taking breath and coming back to things.
And I find for myself as well, when I do start walking, I've got a dog, so it's a great excuse to have to get out.
Yes, so suddenly
my brain just starts to fire in a different way. So then so ideas pop in, or something's like, oh, that's the answer. And it's just sometimes sitting here and staring at this screen just isn't the way to get the best out of my brain either.
It's so true.
And I was so reading something yesterday, you say, about how, you know, feeling like it has to be a big chunk of time. It's been this really interesting article, and I can't remember what it is, but I'll send a link to it. It was talking about numbness. This is what happens when we're in overwhelm for an extended period of time, which so many people are experiencing because of the last 2 years that we've lived through, right? So we, you know, and our body says, can't be in this state anymore, and it kind of goes, shuts off. So then we start to feel numb. And it's really important to hear that and act on it. And one of the pieces of advice in this article was to move your body for 20 minutes. That is how you can help yourself to get out of it. And and 20 minutes was the time period. It wasn't go on holiday for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
and that's important too. But that we can, you know, it can be in those short bursts, and it really helps your brain to get out of that state.
That's really interesting. So I know, obviously, being the overwhelm expert, you have developed your own sort of program with four pillars, isn't it, that you talk about. Would you be willing to share those with
me? Yeah, absolutely. So if we think about overwhelm as kind of drowning or being in that treading water and gasping for air, the four pillars are the boat that are going to get you to the shore. Right? So that's how I think about it. And those four pillars, it's all based on my coaching work and my experience of working, you know, especially around change and what helps us when we're going through big periods of change and transition and uncertainty. So that's kind of where they've come from. And the four pillars are self, boundaries, connection, and vision. So with self, that is all about the energy piece, the stuff we were just talking about and allowing.
Right.
So with there's a bit of a mantra. If you speak to one of many coach, you'll hear say, everything starts with replenishing your energy. So when it all feels like it's falling apart, this is what we can do. And it's extremely important to do it. But also in there is self-belief. So working on that, of course, that feeling of self-worth that drives so much. And values, what's important to us, what drives us forward, and how can we be aligned with those? So that self pillar is kind of made up of those things. Boundaries is huge. So a lot of women that I work with struggle to set boundaries. And if you struggle to set boundaries, you're likely to suffer from overwhelm.
Really?
Yeah.
There's the clear link, is there?
Yeah, because if you can't say no to things or push back, then it's just going to start to become overwhelming.
Yeah, because you wrote an article recently for our website about saying no, and you had this idea of putting it on the fridge door, don't you? Could you just share that for anyone who hasn't read it?
Yes.
I loved that idea.
Yes. So because we so often start with yes, and we're kind of conditioned to be a yes, and that's a really positive thing. And of course, there is a positive in yes when it's the right yes and it's right for you. But it can be really powerful to start with no and to say, well, I'm a no until I decide to be a yes. So if you have that somewhere really visible that you see every day, like on the fridge, just that word no, it can just remind you, and it just creates some space to decide rather than being a knee-jerk yes.
But I do want to just challenge that a bit for someone who feels, by the time you get to my age, it's often these sort of, the idea of saying yes, as all, I'm sure, neurologically or whatever, psychologically, all based around wanting to be liked and be a people pleaser and so on. And this idea that someone would ask, let's say me, to do something and I would start from a no. You know, it used to be that comedy sketch, wasn't it? It was just like, computer says no.
It
feels like that, whereas, you know, we're sort of almost linking it to being an optimistic and can-do kind of person, gets things done. You think, well, I have to say yes to everything. But I absolutely empathize with the feelings that you're describing about then you just end up taking on more and more and more. And I guess, how do you get, I couldn't personally just go from being the kind of person I am to suddenly starting to think no. Next time somebody asks me something, the answer is no until you convince me otherwise.
Or until you convince yourself otherwise, I suppose. So it might be that you just need to decide. It's rather than saying it out loud and saying, no, tell me why I should.
It's
that internal dialogue is, start with a no. Why should I be a yes to this? Why would I be a yes to this? And you can always be a not now, not yet, not at the moment, you know, and we can find ways to say no, and I can't, but let me help you find someone who can. You know, there are ways that we can do a no that allows us to maintain, because I think that's often we fear that we can't say no and maintain relationships. I think that's a big part of it, and that we might not be seen to be someone you want to work with. But if we're saying yes to everything and then can't deliver, that's not good for us or anyone else either. And I think it does link with that purpose piece, the vision and purpose piece of the four pillars, because it's like, is this aligned? Because it'd be a really great way. Is this aligned to my purpose? Mm-hmm. And it might be that lots mm-hmm. of things are. So then is a further question to ask in there. Like, is this with where I'm focusing right now? Is this aligned? So, but having that kind of North Star allows you to kind of filter, I suppose, while living yes. Because the danger of being a yes to everything is we just end up being a martyr. And then we kind of feel like feelings of resentment, we feel exhaustion, and then we're actually not showing up in the way that we want to either. So I think we can, if we can reframe that no to being good for us and others, it can help.
Yeah, it's so true. With my sort of set, taking on too much and overwhelm and so on, it's not me, as I say, feeling like I need to feel like a martyr or something like that, but actually it's this thing about not wanting to let people down. But actually, if things go against, as you say, vision and purpose, then I'm not actually being true to myself anyway. And I always end up feeling disgruntled or whatever it is later down the line because I haven't done what is true to me.
Yeah, exactly that. And somebody asked me this question last week and it was so powerful. They said, who are you letting down if you say yes?
So that's interesting.
Yeah. And I think it was really so powerful.
So those are the first two pillars.
Yes, and boundaries. Then, and that is one that I work on a lot with boundaries with clients and in my program because it can feel so hard and it makes such a massive difference. And then connection. So being connected with others, which a lot of us will say, well, I am really well connected. But it's also thinking about that in a way, thinking about who you can ask for help from as well as who you can support. So we're often very willing to give support to others, but actually asking for it for ourselves can feel difficult. It's quite a similar feeling to the boundaries kind of conversation. And so learning to do that, shifting the beliefs around it can be really powerful. And also just shifting the beliefs around feeling that it's all on you, that I have to do it all myself, you know, knowing that actually there are people who around you who are willing to help, who want to help, who will benefit from helping, you know, all of that. So that's a big one. And then find the vision and purpose is that, as I've talked about, it's like having that guiding. So whether that's for your life, for your work, for your next project, for this week, but it's having some kind of guiding star, that North Star, to help you kind of move towards and make those decisions, move towards what you want to make those decisions around it. So it's so much more motivating to be moving towards what you want and can see that forward momentum rather than being in firefighting mode, which is what we're often in.
And so someone who's been through this program with you, how do you, I mean, I've taken it sort of very personally in terms of how I operate as a human being, but I'm guessing it also very much, not guessing, I mean, it clearly also very much plays into how we are and who we are at work and even the kind of roles that we would go for or find ourselves in. I mean, it's quite interesting, actually, the topics that you talk about, they feel, and maybe I'm wrong, but they feel quite female. So I can see how lots and lots of women, that would be really ringing true, resonating with lots of women. And yet women tend to stereotypically end up in those kind of very caring professions where we do take on lots of things and help other people out and don't say no and so on. Yeah, I'm just interested in how that program or how these choices we make affect the careers that we perhaps see ourselves going for.
Well, let me tell you about some examples. So for example, to bring it to life a bit, somebody on the program last time was considering leaving her role. You know, she said she loved the organization she was in, like having lots of impact, but it's just too much. Through the program, and this was particularly around boundaries and learning how to have those conversations, she went in, had a conversation with her line manager, who hadn't got a clue.
Really?
Hadn't got a clue that their behaviour, what they were doing and not doing, was having such a huge impact on her. So
because she hadn't said anything, I suppose.
So she was experiencing, it was getting super frustrated, and it just took one conversation. So by the end of the programme, she was fully re-engaged in her role, absolutely loving it, and having this kind of really powerful impact in an organisation that makes a big difference in the world. So it can be huge when we kind of articulate it, get clear on things, start to shift our beliefs around it. And I think, because with overwhelm, it definitely holds us back, overwhelm. And I have so many conversations with women who say things like, I can't take on any more. I can't even think about stepping up because I can't possibly take on any more. So then thinking about, well, what's playing into that? What's the assumption, the belief around higher levels of leadership? What is the assumption in there? But also, what's playing into that now? And where, so when we can shift that and find ways, and I see that getting those four pillars strong allows us to lead in a way that works for us rather than against us, because that's really what it's all about. Then those opportunities can feel possible. So all about that kind of potentiality and possibility that opens up that we're just telling ourselves is not there because we can't possibly.
But I love that. And it's really interesting. Again, as you were talking, I'm thinking we automatically equate a more senior role with more work. And actually, if I think of the people I used to know in large organizations who were above me and, you know, right at the top, the thing they were great at was delegating. They had thousands of people underneath them. It wasn't all added to their to-do list. So I suppose that's the almost the sort of the ultimate freedom when you've got all of those four pillars in place. You do feel liberated because you know you almost have control with a soft C over who's doing what and how things are running and how smoothly things are going.
Absolutely. You've got the energy, you're setting your boundaries, and that absolutely includes delegations. You're not trying to do it all yourself. You've got support and you know you can call on support and you're working towards something that's really meaningful. It really has a massive impact. Yeah.
Now, I was going to close out by asking you about a situation with a personal anecdote where you managed an overwhelming situation and brought it under control. But Caroline, I have to say, having spoken to you, you sound like somebody who's had it all under control for years. So it probably feels a bit, I don't know, a bit in the past, a bit outdated. But do you still get overwhelmed by things?
Absolutely, because it's your humor. You talked about, like, of course, like these last couple of weeks with what's going on in the world and feeling that overwhelming kind of sense of helplessness and emotion and, oh, what can I do with this? I think what's shifted for me over the last few years is I can spot it quicker. So this is when we get more, you know, kind of informed about overwhelm, what it is, I can spot it more quickly, and then I know what action I need to take for myself to shift out of it, because I know staying there is just not going to help me or anyone else. So, but the reaction is to say that was the reaction, and it's really important to honour that and to feel the emotion and to, you know, that's the reaction to the situation, and then kind of regulating my nervous system. So, okay, going out for the walk, doing whatever I need to do, having a sob, screaming into a pillow. I often have a dance around to some Very Loud music. So get out of my body. And then I can come back to, okay, what do I want to do? What can I do? Where do I want to focus my energy here? So no, absolutely, there are still moments. I mean, gosh, through lockdown and homeschooling and running my own business. Yes. And yeah, I mean,
of
yes.
Course, of course. Yeah, you still go through the life like everybody else. Yeah, of course.
It is. I think it's just being able to spot it and then having the tools to take action around it. That's what makes the difference for me.
Thank you very much indeed. As you could probably tell, I've got loads out of this conversation personally. Thank you very much.
Thank you. It's been really fun.
I feel really lucky to host this podcast. I get to speak to all these experts and basically put all of the things that keep me up at night to them. I love those four pillars that Caroline talked about. And if you found her approach thought-provoking, you can find out more about Caroline and working with her over on the Careering Into Motherhood website, careeringintomotherhood.com, where you'll also find our curated library of career advice and coaching expertise for women. I'm Jane Johnson. Thanks for listening. Please do follow us and don't forget to leave a review. I love reading your comments.